Welcome to the Nerdstravaganza Podcast. I am your host, Tom, coming at you live with my usual co-host, Rick.
Woohoo!
And new addition, Brian.
No!
We are two men down and one man up tonight.
Some of you guys might remember us talking about our buddy Brian, as we commonly refer to him. Brian's like our gaming go-to guy.
He is. I'd say he's a gentleman and a scholar, but he's more like a scoundrel and researcher of the arcane or something like that. Is that fair, Brian?
I do it all. What can I say?
Yeah, man. So welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so typically we, by way of sort of just throwing you into the tank of cold water here, Brian, we'll let you know that we normally start off with a weekly nerdy roundup where we all discuss all the nerdy happenings for the past week, things we've been doing, video games, tinkering, you name it. And so you've got a few seconds to think of some stuff because I'll throw it over to Rick first.
Well, this week in the... We got to think of a name for this stupid thing. Geeky Weekly Roundup?
Geekly Roundup.
Geeky Weekly?
Yeah, the Geekly Weekly Roundup. I kind of like that. Okay. Man, I have been playing the crap out of my PlayStation. My Xbox.
One of those.
What the fuck is wrong with me?
It's just a different kind of PlayStation.
Yes,
it's exactly. First time jitters.
Yeah, exactly. I'm all nervous. We have a scholar on the show now. yeah, I've been playing... this game called Panzer General. You guys familiar with this game?
I am.
It sounds like it would be like a tank game, but it's not a tank game at all. I hope I got the name right. It's a game where you're an American team against a German team, and there's scenarios set up, and it's like a board game. So it's kind of like miniatures, but it's kind of like a board game. But it's kind of like Risk, but it's kind of not like any of those at the same time. It's pretty cool. I haven't delved into playing multiplayer yet, but I've been playing the single-player campaign in that and been extremely successful. So I've been playing a lot of that and a lot of another Xbox game called Military Madness, which I know you guys are familiar with.
Oh, yes.
From Days of Yore.
I only refer to that by its original name, thank you very much.
Which is?
Nectaris, but I was just being a douche.
Yeah, no, they I couldn't remember what it was called, except for Military Madness, so I figured one of you guys would chime in. I've learned to play around their stupid AI, and I'm hoping that eventually I can find somebody else who has it that I can play multiplayer with, that I know, because we all know that I have social anxiety, even over the internet.
I like how you define completely arbitrary rules as AI.
Yeah, exactly. I love how if I get them in a situation where I can beat its ass, it just sits there and will pass its turn every time. And it's a complete stalemate until I decide to sacrifice a guy. So I'm hoping that playing against a live person will be a little bit more rewarding. But it's a fun game anyway.
If memory serves... The computer has the advantage of you being up against the clock. Like, you only have so many rounds in which to beat the map, and then you lose by default. Even if you're, like, even if you have overwhelming, like, pieces on the field, and he's down to, like, one guy, well, if he runs the clock down, you lose. That's how the original Military Madness was.
I don't think I've come across that.
I think I'm going to be down with getting that, Rick. And I wouldn't be surprised if Brian was down with it, too.
I would be down with that.
Cool. And this Panzer, this General game too, man. Actually, I gotta check the name. I'm not sure if it's even Panzer General.
I know there is a Panzer General. I did not know that was for Xbox. I'm very excited if you have the name right.
But that you can actually play... I think it's that one. There's one of the games you can play multiplayer with like a couple people on the team together. Yeah, it's called Panzer General Allied Assault for Xbox Live Arcade. It's $10.
Oh.
And it's pretty badass. You get these cool, like, combat cards. I'm still not totally familiar with all the rules because the game really holds your hand as far as telling you what you need to do. So it's like playing with somebody who's a better player than me, but I still have fair gameplay while we're going on. But I got a built-in instructor, I guess is the way to put it. So that's been about it for me, just kind of geeking out on my Xbox again, which is nice because it's been a really long time.
That's awesome, man. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. It needs love on a regular basis.
Oh, one other thing that wasn't Xbox related. I did throw down a couple sweet games of the X-Wing minis. With Brian! At nice. Our local game spot, Tate's. We found a nice little place to play, and it was a fantastic game. Two awesome rounds. I won one, he won one.
Rebels won both.
And that was at Tate's, local game institution Tate's, who's not yet our sponsor, but I'm sure it'll only be a matter of time before they are.
That's Tate's Gaming Satellite.
Where they play the Dave Matthews Band song Satellite 24/7. No, they don't do that. I would leave.
I wouldn't.
Does that conclude your weekly geekly roundup, sir?
Yes, and actually, even though I am done, you'll notice it was a lot longer than it normally is. So I apologize, but I don't at the same time.
Well, we are one man down since we're two down, one up.
Making up for lost time, baby.
That's right.
Isn't that innuendo for something?
Two men down, one man up?
I believe.
Sounds like it. It should be if it's
it
not.
It should be.
Yeah.
It's like doing push-ups at the gym or something like that.
We can get into what two men down, one man up. That might be our podcast title tonight. But skipping over the two men that were down, let's go to the one man that were up. Brian, how about you, man? You got you have an inaugural weekly, geekly, whatever the heck we're going to call it, roundup for us?
I have been doing something that I have done throughout my life, but it comes and it goes, and it has definitely came yet again. I've been painting a lot of miniatures.
Nice.
And when I'm not painting them, I'm playing them at Tate's Gaming Satellite. Yes, I'm painting a game that I'll never play with anybody because everyone's super competitive assholes, but I still love the game. My Signar army is coming along quite well.
From the minis game War Machine.
Warma Hordes, as, again, obnoxious douches like to call it. No, sorry.
I play to win, bro. I'm sorry that you can't accept that.
I'm going to go throw a fit in the corner now.
That was pretty much it. Social time was with Rick playing Star Wars, and alone time was painting... and browsing.
Where did we play that? Where did we play again?
Oh, I believe it was called Tate's Gaming Satellite.
So it's a gaming satellite, and it's affiliated with what store?
Tate's.
I see. Tate's. Okay.
I think remember that. We'll try to put a. I'll try to remember to put a link in the show notes.
That's Tate. Okay.
You know, the best thing about playing at Tate's is that it's very Star Wars centric there. In the store, you know, you can go and peruse through the vintage Star Wars toys and then go over and have an awesome battle in the gaming satellite. It's pretty badass.
And I rather like that it doesn't stink whatsoever.
Nope.
Tate's prides itself on not on smelling neutral.
They're like the Switzerland of comic book stores. Of comic stench. They're the when Switzerland of comic stench.
When it comes to odor, we don't take sides. That's their motto.
And there goes the support.
So browsing, yeah. I'm assuming that's internet browsing?
Yes. Anyway. Had I said surfing, it could possibly have been cool, but browsing is, no, not cool at all. I obsessively watch every Kickstarter I can find.
Nice.
I've been reading a very old comic that is new to me called Darth and Droids.
Oh, the webcomic?
The webcomic.
Yeah, oh, I remembered that.
That is good stuff.
Apparently, yeah. I missed it until like a week ago.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yes.
We'll have to link that because that thing was really funny. I caught bits and pieces of it here and there and completely escaped my mind until just now.
I actually have a link in mind just for Rick.
Did you get to the point where they're landing? It's pretty early on. They're landing on Naboo, and they're in different ships. And the one guy tries to communicate. The guy that's playing Qui-Gon tries to communicate with Obi-Wan, and the DM's you're in different ships, so he yells, and the DM's just like, no.
Yeah.
I'm glad you discovered that. It's never too late to discover that. My roundup this week, unfortunately, it's been a lot of repetition because I'm playing some games that are occupying a great deal of my time. On the Xbox 360 home computer entertainment console, I am playing Borderlands 2. That game is more Borderlands. If you like Borderlands, you'll love Borderlands 2. I'll say it again. And I like Borderlands, so I love Borderlands 2. It's good stuff. It seems to be... The variety of guns seems to be higher, and I'm having a hard time. Like, I really have to sit and analyze guns now when I pick them up. Like, do I want to get rid of this? Because on one, the guns are more nuanced now, I guess I would say. I've seldom picked up a gun where I'm like, oh, this is a clear winner. It's incremental improvement. Uh-huh. And aside from that, the artificial intelligence on the enemies is a lot better. They jig and zig and zag and move, give you a hard time. And still a pretty game, still an awesome game. Love Borderlands 2.
What class are you playing?
I played the analog class to the Hunter from the first Borderlands, which is, I don't know, he's some kind of like cyber ninja guy.
Ah.
He doesn't have I think I mentioned this in our previous episode we did too, but he doesn't have the Bloodwing, rack, like, you know, bird creature that you can let loose on people, but he has this cool cloaking thing that you can use to distract people while you sneak around and kill them. So that's kind of cool.
I was very excited about the Gunzerker until I learned he was short. Now I don't know who to play.
I like this new whatever he's called, the new Hunter. Yeah, the ninja. So far, so good. It's strange that he's a sniper, but he excels at melee. So I'm not really sure. Yeah, I'm enjoying playing it, put it that way. Let's see. Apart from Borderlands, of course, I'm still playing The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword for the Nintendo Wii. Nintendo Wii family home computer. And that's been fun. Actually, really good game. I'm not going to lie. And it's really long and involved, and there's a lot of cool stuff to find. So can't say enough positive about that. Fun game. I've accepted the waggle controls for what they are, as I mentioned before. And, fun times with that. Let's see. I went and picked up a new video game today. Okay, I should just mention, and this will probably conclude my roundup. I'm up in Seattle, and there is a GameStop here. Well, it's run by the biggest like geeks ever. Like GameStop should like promote these people to like lords of GameStop because like they're constantly getting me to reserve these obscure like Atlas titles and stuff like for the 3DS and different systems, and like they just totally like the type of like obscure game that I'm into. I know you're into too, Brian. Think like end of PlayStation 2's life cycle Atlas games, right? Coming out one after another. They're so persuasive that I'm not going to be in Seattle like at the beginning part of next year, but they have me feeling guilty about not reserving more games. Like, oh, well, this game's coming out in January. I'm not going to be here. Well, this one's coming out in February. What about that one? I'm not going to be here for that. Well, you really should reserve them. I really should, but I'm not going to be here. Yeah, well, I mean, you should still reserve them. I had to like, no, I'm not doing it, man. But I picked up a game, an Atlas game for the 3DS today called Code of Princess. And I have absolutely no idea what kind of game this is. It might be a fighter. I have no idea. So I'll report back on that once I play it.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and guess that it's a 3D game.
On the 3DS, yeah. Stands to reason it's 3D, but one never knows.
Did you go out on a limb here and say enjoy your dating sim?
Oh God, you think it might be it might be a 3D dating sim?
You know what? If it is, then that actually ties into what my next question was going to be for you, and that is, have you any interest in the large screen 3DS XL or whatever the hell it's called?
Well, this may be a rationalization of the fact that I bought my purple 3DS like a week before the XL came out.
Right.
Or it may be, or this may just like be a legitimate preference on my part. I'm not interested in getting that system because I like the portability factor of the 3DS. I can throw it in my back pocket, carry it around, and allow it to pick up like street passes of people, you know, which, by the way, I picked up a few more of those this week. I kind of really like that aspect of the 3DS, and I think the XL might be too large for that. I might be wrong, but it looks larger. Like, it looks like it would be a little more cumbersome to carry around.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the bigger one is definitely, it's definitely geared toward toilet play.
Yeah, yeah, as opposed to carrying it around.
That sounds so not Nintendo.
It's a dead legger's paradise.
Yeah, dead legger's paradise. Yeah, but supposedly the larger 3D screen helps you like focus on the 3D a little bit better, which I'll admit I sometimes lose focus of the screen on the 3DS. So that might be an advantage. A possible disadvantage is I think it's the same number of pixels stretched over a larger screen. I'm not sure what that effect is, or you know, or what that results in. So
I know on the older 3DS, the non-3D one. So I guess it's not the 3DS. I don't know. The non-3D one that they made big. It doesn't look bad. It looks pretty good.
Okay. So maybe, yeah, I don't know. What would sell me on the 3DS XL is if they come out with one in green, my favorite color. Oh. Right now, I'm going to go with purple, my second favorite color, and just stick with that.
We got the same taste in gaming colors, my friend.
We share so much in common, Rick.
We really do.
We should do a podcast. Let's see. Oh, and to sum up, to round things out, I am still enjoying the hell out of my Barnes & Noble Nook e-reader. Is that really called an e-reader? I hope I use that terminology right. I don't want to lose sponsorship.
That's what I'd call it.
Okay. I have been thoroughly enjoying that. I finished up the Ice and Fire series of books to the extent that the author has finished them. Nice. And I've followed one of your... I'm reading a short book called Building a Better Mouse, I think it's called, that you recommended to me, Rick. All about... It's kind of like an engineering journal of Epcot more than it is like a book.
Yes. That's a really good description, dude, right there.
Yeah, because it's kind of... It might come across as disjointed if you didn't take it as what it is, which is just like, oh, man, here's my story. Oh, check this out. Here's what happened. Oh, it's just a bunch of... Yeah, it's an engineering journal. And It kind of. Like, you get the sense that they sat down and just sort of, you know, hashed out one story after another. It reads like a conversation, I guess.
Yeah, I liked it, especially it's, you know, the fact that I tool around with electronics and animatronics and all that kind of stuff. I found it, and being a giant Disney fan, I found it really fun to read because, you know, you kind of always look at Disney as being the end-all, be-all, the cream of the crop, and you realize that they go through just as much bullshit as anybody else does. whether you're coding, you know, for some alarm company or some weird product, or you're programming shows for Disney, you still deal with the same bullshit. So it was kind of cool to see that.
Yeah, and basically that's exactly right, Rick. This book details, it just gives you an idea of what it was like to go to work at WED, if you're familiar with the Wedway People Mover, for example. WED was the actual, like, the engineering firm that built Epcot and built Tokyo Disney and built all this different stuff, and it's just all about what it was like to go to work there and the different challenges they faced, so
I always thought that was a Midway People Mover.
Nope. Nope, it's WED, which is just Walt Disney's initials. Turns out
Walter Elias Disney.
Yeah, so if you want to peel back the covers on what went into building Epcot, I recommend it. But aside from that, I got nothing. That's it. That's all I did.
Move along. Nothing else to see here.
Nothing else to see here. The animatronics are broken. Anyway, that's That gets us past our weekly geekly roundup, and I think it's time for us to get into the meat and taters of the show.
Meat and potatoes!
This week's topic is kind of loosey-goosey news and events. We decided since we were going to welcoming Brian on board was a major goal of today's show, and since we've now accomplished that, we thought we'd just dive in with each of us talking about a few tidbits of news or headlines or some such thing that caught our minds, or that caught our eye this week, I should say. And each of us could just sit here and yak about that a bit, talk it over. Does that sound right? Is that what we agreed on, guys?
That's exactly what we agreed on.
All right.
And since I guess I'll go first, I found something pretty cool today. I don't know if it's new or old, but it's new to me. Mm-hmm. And it ties in with...
Is it Darson Droids?
Oh, that's good, too.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. this ties in with our Nintendo talk we just had. Excuse me. All right, we all know that I kind of skipped over the whole Super Nintendo era of gaming, right?
Yeah.
Well, I found a,
again.
I found a product that will make me experiment with some SNES, dude. I found a little thing called a Supaboy. S-U-P-A-B-O-Y, Supaboy Portable Pocket SNES Console.
Cool.
And it looks like the Super Nintendo controller, exaggeratedly bigger, obviously, that has a built-in color screen. And you can either play it as a handheld unit, you plug the cartridges into the top, or you can use it as a main game console and plug in controllers into this larger-than-life faux controller that works as the console as well. And you can hook it up to your TV if you wanted to.
That's cool!
And they're on eBay for, I don't know, like around $75. So, that being said, you guys know how much I love handheld gaming. Because I love playing on a toilet, dude. It's no secret. I mean, some people
certainly
may find
not.
It embarrassing, but it is no secret. I will shit play any gaming system. So, what I want to hear from you guys is your opinion on this, number one. Just in general, because I know we haven't played it, so it's not a review. But I would also like to know, what games would you guys recommend if I was so inclined to go ahead and pick one of these bad boys up?
Wow. So Super NES games.
I will start. There is... It may not be your cup of tea. I don't know if you like the traditional JRPG as much as I do. But if you're willing to give it a shot, Paladin's Quest for the Super Nintendo was one of the most underrated games of the first three or four eras.
Nice.
Yes, I have. I own that game, and it's yeah. Why wasn't that heralded?
It was a lousy time to be into RPGs, and it wasn't a Final Fantasy.
That's what I was going to say. Does it play like a Final Fantasy or anything?
It's very similar. But different.
Are there something is telling me there was like a Mech Warrior game out or a BattleTech game out or something for Super Nintendo?
There was an amazing Genesis game. Oh, you know what you would love? I don't remember the game of it. There was a Shadowrun game for the Super Nintendo. I don't remember the exact name of it. The Shadowrun game. You would probably love it.
Ooh.
You would love being a Decker.
Nice. I remember there was a Hero... They're not a HeroClix, but yeah, HeroClix. Well, a Clix-based game on a Shadowrun. Same Shadowrun?
Very likely.
Cool.
Mech game for the Super NES. They did for the. I think there was a Front Mission. Maybe
that's what I was thinking, dude. That's what I was thinking. Front Mission. I love
it was Japanese. It was. See, you'd have to get the Super Famicom version because it was Japanese.
Oh, this plays. That's what that was. I was going to get to that. It will. It's compatible with Japanese Super Famicom cartridges.
Then, with the internet resources being what they are, and if you don't mind that, you know, using those to get through Japanese menus and not being able to understand the dialogue, Front Mission, you might like it.
Cool.
It was supposed to be one of the graphically most impressive games, or one of the more graphically impressive games of that era.
Badass.
So, yeah, you might like that. And you might like Zardion. Remember Zardion, Brian?
Zardion, I do remember Zardion with the poor cougar.
Yes. It's this anime sort of inspired mech like platforming shooter game, Rick. And for some reason, Brian and I like played it for 10 seconds, just like wrote it off.
I bought that game years later for I think 17 cents at a yard sale. It's not that bad. It's a pretty simplistic shooter, but it's got a little bit of personality. And it guest stars, what's his name? Ravage from the Transformers.
Yeah, the cougar creature thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we were too... I think I played that later, and I was like, we were really, like, immediately dismissive of this. Like, we were just, being kids, I guess, we were just like, nope.
Cool, well, that gives me a couple different genres and some bits and pieces to look at. So if I decide to get one of these things, maybe I'll hit you guys up for some cartridge borrowing.
Okay, cool.
We'll see how it goes. I'll keep you posted.
And to answer the other part of your question, yes, I absolutely approve of that, legality aside. handheld 16-bit games excite me in a way that makes me not want to think of you on the toilet at all.
Yeah, so I think that's something you should pursue, Rick.
Cool. Anybody else got anything that caught your eye on the web this week?
You want to go, Brian? You got? I know you mentioned some Kickstarters you were looking at.
I can transition from 16-bit gaming to 16-bit-ish music. There's actually a pretty interesting Kickstarter, Final Fantasy VI. Fan album.
Hmm.
I saw that. That looked cool.
I figured that would be Tom's thing too.
Yeah, you linked me to Kickstarter, and that did look cool. In fact, I may or may not be looking at that right now. And in fact, I am.
So what's it, what exactly is it consist of? Like, people doing their own chiptune versions of Final Fantasy music, or what's the scoop on it?
A couple of guys, I don't think it's a wide audience, but it's a little company, that is doing inspired music from the game in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, I think I heard that they had some problems. They're actually paying royalties because it's so similar, but it's still their own thing.
Weird. What's the buy-in and what's some of the, like, cool perks for jumping on board with that?
Digital download for $10, which I think is a really good price for 5 discs worth of music, all the way up to $5,000 for them to score your own game.
Oh shit, that's cool.
That is cool.
Pricey, but cool.
I know, Brian, that they have raised $103,000. Some change.
Yeah. Out of their, I think, 30 grand goal. So they're doing quite well. And it's got 2 weeks left. So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's badass.
People are excited about Final Fantasy music.
I am, actually. That's one of the, some of those games have some of the best video game music ever. So
watch a little video in the intro. There's some good examples.
I will endeavor to do that, sir.
Yeah, we'll link these videos, the Kickstarter stuff, we'll link that on the show notes, too.
Absolutely.
So go to the site. Go to the site. The www.nerdstravaganza.com website.
Brought to you by Tate's, but not really. But maybe. Someday.
That would be nice.
Awesome, man. Got any other kicked off starters for
us? Not to beat up Kickstarter, but I do love me some some board games, and there is a Settlers of Catan gaming board, which makes your game very sturdy, and you can bump the table, and your cat can jump on it, and you lose your progress. It's pretty interesting, and very well done, it looks like.
There's something similar to that board that I've seen on Thingiverse, the 3D printer repository, I guess you'd call it.
Oh.
It's not as full-blown as the Kickstarter board, where it's like a flat board with the indents for the tiles to fit in and stuff. It's more of a board that you... a border board, if that makes any sense. You print out the pieces, and you basically build a frame, and then you build your Catan board inside that frame. Yeah, and it keeps it locked in, which is
cool.
Okay, so that... I took sort of just a cursory glance at this, and now that you describe it, it makes a little more sense. So basically, if you're sitting around with a bunch of like semi-drunk people, they're kicking the Catan board around. This keeps the whole friggin' land from getting torn up.
This also points out in the Kickstarter, if you're playing on an uneven surface, as you often must at gaming stores, where there's two tables pushed together and they don't quite meet,
yeah.
This is a hard surface, which will keep your playing edge.
I run into that, so that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah, this thing's 3D printed as well. If I played the real one, I would probably get into this, but I play the Xbox one.
You and your Xbla.
I know, man.
Yeah.
I love that damn thing. Took me so long to get on board, but now that I'm here.
We gotta get you in on some real world Catan, man. Quit living in the virtual world.
I will convert you with Arkham Horror.
Yeah, we gotta play this one.
Looking forward to it. I'm not against playing the board game. It's just, it's so easy just to sit down on the couch and play with virtual players who, again, I'm handheld where I don't need to know what to do. Because the computer tells me, okay, now it's your turn. Do you want to trade? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? So, I don't know. It's a good thing and a bad thing. Because I really have no idea how to play, but I play it all the time. It's kind of ridiculous.
I find the trading not quite as fun on the Xbox. All you can do is blow kisses and shout incoherently. I much prefer to throw things and curse.
And I play another game that I play on there a lot is the Ticket to Ride, which I bought for Steam as well, but I haven't played it yet.
Well, if Ticket to Ride isn't tickling your fancy, I've got a Train Simulator you might be into. Long-time loyal listeners will recall that co-host Grant bought me the Train Simulator during a recent Steam sale, and I either have spent tremendous amounts of time with that and just don't remember, or I have yet to install and play that.
I'm guessing the latter.
Yeah, probably a safe guess. Yeah, I mean, when the day comes that I actually want to operate virtual locomotives, I'm covered. It's good to know.
I just want to know if there's a mod to rob the trains.
That would be cool.
That would have made him play it already.
We don't carry any cash, kid. We only take debit card. Oh, man!
Son of a...
Cashless world. Go rob something else.
Any other Kickstarters that we should know about? We're two for two. Let's go three for three.
I will go with this one just because it's a little running down on time, and I think it's a really cool idea if you have the money. Medieval Village for 28mm gamers. It's a really beautiful set for games. It's a little limited. It's only this nice, peaceful town, but we all know how quickly nice, peaceful towns get pillaged in these games, so it probably sees a lot of play. And it's very modular. There's roofs that you can take off and play inside the building, and there's doors that you can move from one side to the other. It's good stuff, and it looks really high quality.
What's some of the buy-ins and the rewards and stuff?
You can actually start getting pieces, I think, 35 is your first actual piece.
Right.
And then you get a brewery for 50, which for as detailed as this is not bad for scenery. I know cardboard castles cost like $50.
Yeah, that Terra Eclipse stuff is fairly expensive. I mean, it looks neat, but there's...
I hear good things about it, but this is way more detailed and sturdy looking than that.
Nice.
Once you bought in, there's add-ons, apothecary shop for 25, a three-level water mill for 35. I'm going to have a very good 2013.
Right?
By the time, like, all these, like, miniatures and things come out that, that we're ordering on Kickstarter, we'll be, like, too busy, like, lining up the next generation of things on Kickstarter to bother with any of them.
I'm not interested in this anymore. I bought it a year ago.
This new thing's coming out now. Forget about it.
I'll have purchased Relic Knights 2 before I ever played Relic Knights.
Yeah, exactly. We'll still be painting and assembling Relic Knights 1 when we're buying Relic Knights 4.
Brian, there's one more Kickstarter that you mentioned that I really want you to talk about, because it was pretty interesting. That being the one that resembles something that we liked as kids.
I'm going to out these guys just because it may not be entirely legit, but there's a really cool Kickstarter that reminds me of a cartoon I used to watch, and it's called Classic Dungeon Adventurers Miniature Set Chibi Anime Guide.
I'm sorry.
It's a Japanese name. Classic Dungeon Adventurers Miniature Set in the chibi anime style. And it's a set of figures with some really cool looking dice to go with it. I don't know if you're familiar with chibi, but it's super deformed. They're tiny and cute, and it's very reminiscent of something.
Mm-hmm.
Of what?
Well, take a look, and if you don't...
Yeah, this is a blatant ripoff of Dungeons & Dragons, the cartoon.
We were trying to be more tactful.
If you want to go right at it, yeah, that's fine.
This draws much inspiration from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon of our youth.
Yeah, you got, like, that little mage guy looks like the other guy, and...
I really want that. Like, it's really cool. So, I don't want them to get, a cease and desist or anything.
No, I like this. This looks pretty cool. We're definitely going to have to link this one, too. You might have to buy this one.
I think I'm going to have to.
The game looks pretty amazing, too, with the map and the dice, and I am a fan of that.
All right, well, let's get off Kickstarter before we start talking too much stuff that people have no idea what the hell we're talking about until after they click on the show.
Kickstarter
notes.
Show.
But, yeah, this is definitely something we're definitely going to be bringing Kickstarter stuff that we find interesting, bring it to light, and get some of these projects done and out there so we're able to play them, because if we can promote them and it's something that we want to play, if we don't promote it well enough, then we'll never be able to play it. So that gives us some incentive right there.
And like all the other games we buy and play, never.
Yeah, all the time. And speaking of buying games, dun dun dun, did you guys see the news about Xbox is getting rid of the Microsoft point system on the Live?
They're going to cash?
They're going to the standard microtransactions. And I'm assuming, well, there was no real reason, you know, it hasn't been said, but my assumption is that it's due to the fact that Windows 8 doesn't use Microsoft points, and if you're going to be buying anything, so within their company getting a uniform system. So they're phasing out the points, and I've noticed for the last couple of months, Tuesday is like religious day for me with my Xbox. Very first thing I do when I get home is I come in, turn on R2, take the dog out for a walk, come in, sit down for an hour, and just peruse everything new on the system. And I've noticed quite a few times that things were popping up with dollar values instead of the Microsoft point values. And I just found it really weird, and I couldn't understand why until this week when I saw some links that they were talking about it. It's going away. It could be as soon as the end of the month of October or as late as the end of the year, but it's looking like by the end of the year, points shall be no more.
Given my gaming background, I'm out of touch. I have not heard about that at all, but I'm very excited about it because I always thought it was a bit of a silly system.
I think it's a silly system too, but there's two things that I like about it. The first thing I like about it is I really, honestly, do not feel like I'm spending money, which I love. And the other thing I like about it is that you're not paying taxes on the game. Like, you're paying, you know, $5. It's just a straight-up $5. Whereas, if I'm not mistaken, the PlayStation store, you have to pay tax on purchases. So I don't know if that's going to change. I'm assuming it will. But, you know, you're actually kind of getting the games a little bit cheaper because you're not paying tax.
Not to be killjoy, but if you can out my game, I'll bring you down too. Don't you pay taxes when you purchase the points?
Not when you buy them online. Like if you were to buy a card, like a gift card or whatever, I think you have to pay tax on that. But I just up mine right through my console, and it just, you know, charges it however it charges it, my credit card that my billing statement's attached to, and I'm good to go.
I apparently need to pay more attention.
What makes you think you're above paying taxes, Rick? I mean, are you like you don't think you're part of the 99% like us?
I'm not saying I'm above it, but it's one of those things where I'm used to not having to do it, and now my $5 game isn't going to cost me a straight $5 or $10 anymore. It's going to be, you know, $5+. But, you know, I guess it's in a way, I don't even mind paying the tax because I'm paying exact amounts, and hopefully we'll be able to put exact amounts on. The one thing that would frustrate the living hell out of me with Xbox points is, like, I'd need 160 points, but I'd have to buy 400. And then I'm stuck again with, like, this oddball chunk of change in my Microsoft account to the point where, you know, I would try to buy some stupid avatar gear or something in order to just clear my account completely or whatever.
I'm surprised they're getting away from that because I kind of thought that was why they did it. So they buy stupid stuff for the 20 points you had left over.
Totally worked every time on me. So that's my big Xbox Microsoft phasing out Microsoft points news of the week.
Wow.
It's interesting news.
I'm neither for or against it. It'll be a little bit of a change, but they've already changed it, the entire Xbox system so much on me that whatever. I'll swallow anything they throw at me at this point.
And you think this is part of them just sort of consolidating the look, the feel, and the whole experience across Windows on PCs and the Xbox and Windows phones? They're sort of just trying to say, like, hey, this is the Microsoft platform no matter what you're on.
Yeah. So they don't have to have, you know, separate systems for phones or PC or console. They can just throw that all into one big financial system, I guess. That seems to be the general consensus, at least.
Very in line with what I've heard about their upcoming system rumors.
Uh-oh, another Xbox is coming out?
Well, I guess they're calling it 720 for now, but the rumor is really, really heavily integrating Windows 8 into it, which makes perfect sense. Right. Probably why it's a rumor.
Well, as long as I can get a Christmas edition R5D4 version, I'm fine with that.
As long as I can get a lumpy or scratchy edition from the Star Wars Holiday Special Christmas edition Xbox, then I'm okay with that. Yeah. Well, I've got some gaming news myself. More of a gaming observational article that I could report on if you guys would like to hear about it.
Hit it.
All right. So I'm up here in Seattle and happened upon an article in a local publication. That local publication is Wired Magazine. No, it's not. That local publication is about to be opened up by me. And I think it was the Seattle Times. And, of course, as I'm about to talk about, I misplaced the stupid episode. The stupid article. Basically, we'll link to it. But the premise of the article was that Nintendo, it was harkening back to, it was basically harkening back to the original Wii, and saying, you know, people had their doubts about that, but it turned out to be kind of a game changer. And for those of us who are a little more hardcore as gamers, the Wii is a failure, right? We don't like it didn't live up to our expectations. It's not what we want. You know, boo down with the Wii. And like a lot of people on our set, let's face it, crap on the Wii and have no use for it, right? Well, this guy's saying in the article, be that as it may, it attracted a lot of like casual non-gamers. It did exactly what Nintendo said before its launch they were setting out to do, which is it sort of drew in non-gamers. And he thinks that they're going to have a repeat with this system. If you don't know much about the Wii U, it's another kind of underpowered console, just like the Wii. I mean, it's not going to win.
It's a current gen.
Basically, yeah, the power of this system is going to have like a slight edge over current generation systems, these Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. So it will be the laggard when the next generation of system comes out, at least in terms of graphic power and so on. But just as the Wii forced Microsoft and Sony to implement their own motion, those of you interested in that topic, the previous episode of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast on that very topic, so will this system force change in the next generation. That's basically the premise. And he goes, he gets into one piece of interesting functionality, which is the sort of integration with your cable system or your entertainment system. That the main components of the system is you have the console, and then you've got this handheld tablet, and that thing is sort of like an entertainment hub. It is like this awesome universal remote that's meant to take the place of like your browse and watch on demand functions on your cable box. You do all that through the Wiimote, or the Wii Gamepad, as it's called. So imagine you're sitting there playing. I guess what he seems to indicate Nintendo wants is you're going to be sitting there playing some games, and then you only watch TV. With that tablet still in hand, quit the Wii, go to TV. You know what? I want to watch, you know, Walking Dead. You know, look that up. When's that playing? Oh, here it is. Let me check that out. And in addition to that, you're using that tablet as your social networking thing. It's, you know, to do tweets and Facebook and all that good stuff. Basically, the set-top box, as it's always been imagined, is taking the form of the handheld tablet, according to what this guy's saying. And he thinks that is going to, one, result in Nintendo having great success, and two, prompt the other game developers to follow suit. So there, that was my sort of overwrought synopsis of the article, and I would like to get your guys' thoughts on that. I have pre-ordered a Wii U, as you know. I'm kind of excited about it, because, just as I was with the Wii, and I'm hoping that it's going to deliver. So what do you guys think?
I know Brian's got some stuff to say about it. I don't really, except for the fact that my biggest problem with the Wii has always been the game selection. It just seemed very childish and not geared towards me, I think. Or adults in general, really.
You're part of that more hardcore gamer set. You want a video gamer's video game.
But, you know, I love playing games like Animal Crossing and stuff like that, so I don't know. Maybe I wasn't open-minded enough to it, but there was something about it that just kind of shut me off to it. Not a hatred, per se, just a disinterest. Just, ugh, whatever.
This is a difficult topic for me, because I do really like Nintendo, and I actually
did like the Wii. I just feel very clearly in third place, and I kind of wonder what kind of a business model, well, we'll teach the other guys what to do to be even better, is... It's exciting as a consumer to see the set-top box maybe possibly finally realized, and I do kind of like the idea of one controller for everything, even when I'm not playing. But I don't like this year's games coming out on next year's system.
Yeah, that's weird.
I mean, the Wii, again, it's easy to lose. Just like with the Nintendo 64 and maybe to a lesser extent the GameCube, I think it's easy from our perspective as gamers to write the Wii off as a failure, but financially, I mean, it's been a success. They've made profit on every unit sold. I don't know now that we're coming to the end of this generation, if they still are the leader in total console sales. But Nintendo did extremely well with the Wii. And yes, you could certainly cite, the what's called the attachment rate, meaning the number of additional games people bought for the system being very low, as evidence of it sort of having this, of it maybe not succeeding in all areas that it could. But I guess this guy's article was more looking at it from a business perspective. Like, Nintendo, this thing's going to do as well as the Wii, and I'm a little skeptical about that.
Yeah, I find that's big shoes to fill.
I don't see the need to upgrade for a casual. Why would the geriatric convention that bought Wii Sports upgrade to Wii U Sports, assuming they're still around?
Right. Why would the old people need to upgrade, and then the younger kids? Why spend more money on a system that they're not going to notice the difference anyway? So. It seems like the people that would buy it are everybody in between, but it also seems like that's generally who they're not marketed to.
Who they're trying purposely to exclude.
Yeah, I think Nintendo had a consumer electronics hit on their hands as more than they had a video game system hit on their hands.
Right.
I know people who are not video gamers. They do not play video games. They are not gamers. No way, no how. You haven't played a video game. They've got a Wii in their house, right next to their plasma TV. Or not their plasma. That's passe. But their awesome piece of electronics and their contemporary furniture. It was the hot gadget to have. Everybody who was anybody bought one, and you had your friends over to play Wii Sports like three times. And the thing's probably not even plugged in anymore. Just like chucked away in a wall unit.
It was the Tickle Me Elmo of consoles.
It kind of was. I mean, the appeal went beyond just children, but I know a bunch of people. Like, when they came to me, like, hey, man, you can find a Wii? I'm like, oh, they're all sold out. They're like, yeah, we've been looking for one forever. And my question was, why? Why are you looking for a Wii? Like, you don't play video games. And it was always, well, I played this bowling game. It's awesome. I want that. And they never bought another game for the system, And, if Nintendo's benchmark for success is repeating that, that's a tall order to fill. Because I don't know if you're going to sucker people. I think this one's a higher price point now. I'm not sure you're going to be able to sucker that same crowd in. They're going to have to try to pull in more of the gaming audience, I think.
Do you know... you're 100% on that. I think you're right. That's a big shoes to fill. And the simple fact that it happened once wasn't necessarily a fluke, but I think it was a one-timer. I think it was a one-time home run at that level because, like you said, it was the newest of new. Now it's just a newer and improved, but that's not the same as totally brand new, where every single office secretary, mom, sister, grandmother, uncle, father, brother, cousin was talking about, ooh, I played this cool bowling game, and we just held the controller. So, yeah, I'm with you 100% on that.
It's substantially different in a certain way. Like, the controller is essentially a tablet. And
right, but I mean, in like what Brian was saying, in the consumer, the people that were sucked in to buy it the first time, I don't think they're going to see the difference enough in it in order to get to go out and be like, this is as new of a technology as the original thing that sucked me into buying this, but I don't know enough technically to comprehend that and understand that you actually are selling me something different, not something upgraded of what I've already got. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair point. And Brian, I think, made a really good point when he was like, I don't want to play, like, you know, what was it, next year's, say that again, Brian?
This year's games on next year's system?
Right.
Aren't they releasing Assassin's Creed 3 for it?
I believe they are. Yeah, they're kind of doing some Me Too. I mean, don't quote me, but I think they are sort of like, look, we can also have this generation.
And like Arkham C, which is actually kind of last year's game now.
Now, to be fair, special editions of Arkham City with a little bit better graphics and new levels. And
game of the year edition with all the DLC.
Okay, yeah, maybe like one or two extra items in there.
What are they going to put, some Force 7 on it? Is that what it's called?
Mode 7?
Mode 7.
Well, they're getting Bayonetta 2, which I don't know if that's an exclusive or if they're the first one to get that. I mean, they're trying to reach out to the hardcore gamer set. But, I mean, if you're any indication, and Brian, and you're as representative of that set as anybody I know, they're going to have a pretty steep hill to climb, because you don't even own a Wii, do you? I mean, you kind of have washed your hands of Nintendo.
Well, in fairness, I don't own a PlayStation 3 either. I have become the moocher of video gaming as of lately. I play it and I enjoy it. I absolutely loved the Resident Evil experience in that game. It was the best use of motion controls I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, where the Wii mode actually became your gun, right?
Yeah.
That's because you never played Steel Battalion.
I have never played Steel Battalion.
It's a total joke at my own expense. I ranted and raved about how awesome this game was going to be. It's the biggest flop in history.
it's just hopelessly broken. Like, I'm waiting for them to be like, oh, here's like a patch that takes away all the motion controls and enjoy the game.
I pre-ordered it. The first game I ever bought pre-ordered, I didn't even open it. I returned it unopened and got my money back. So, Tom, going back to the what's it, Wii U, is that what it's called?
Yep.
Do you know, is that going to be cable provider specific, like the Xbox experiences with the Xbox TV stuff, where it ties into UVerse or whatever the hell that thing's called?
So, I read the article and I meant to do more research so I could answer exactly those questions. That, you know, there are questions along those lines accurately, but I'm just going to speculate since I was too lazy to actually do research and say that, yeah, I'm pretty it seems to me it's going to be, or I shouldn't even say that. My assumption is that there will be a tie-in with your provider, just like you currently get to choose from Xfinity or Fios or whatever through Xbox.
Right.
So
right.
Will you get to, you know, choose from your cable provider with the tablet, and once you've done that, this thing becomes like now your Comcast remote or your Fios remote or your UVerse remote or whatever, and has all kinds of cool integration with their system.
And hopefully a peanut butter screen. A peanut butter proof screen in a children's system.
You know this, Brian. This thing basically, it supports the Wiimote, or the latest generation of the Wiimote, which has the Wii Motion Plus, which is like the most, which is the best version of the Wii controls to come out. Has like more, it's more precise than the original Wii controller was. So it supports that, and it supports this new controller, which is this tablet thing. And I think you and I discussed this in the past, Brian. It comes with one tablet when you buy it. If you want a second tablet controller, doesn't that cost nearly as much as like the entire system?
I saw the breakdown once. I think the system's like probably $100 of the initial cost, and the controller's like three of it or two of it. Yeah, it's a very expensive controller.
Yeah, so the peanut butter screen point you bring up is kind of valid. Like, I'm at my house and like little Tommy Jr. wants to play with the Wii U. Get your mitts off it, you little booger. Like, I'm not going to let you touch that thing. I don't know if I want like that something that expensive in the hands of my brat.
And here's what they're going to do. They're going to put the operating system of that thing into an app so you can buy and download the app instead and then just use any tablet.
Well,
Nintendo would never do that. You have to buy power cords for Nintendo.
That would be a great solution, but yeah, I was being facetious. Obviously.
It's funny you say that because maybe a month or two ago when Microsoft, was it Surface, was announced for their tablets, people were like, oh, that just killed the Wii U because basically, it's not inconceivable that they could integrate the exact proprietary or something akin to the proprietary system Nintendo has come up with. Mm-hmm. They could integrate that through just like a tablet. Like, oh, you want that functionality for your Xbox 720? Here, just download this app, and there you go.
I will rumor monger for a moment. I don't know if anyone else caught this, but it was really big for about a day. I think Steam's or Valve's or some company's Christmas card had a screenshot of their offices, and in the background there was a red Xbox 360 controller that just happened to look exactly like it had a screen attached to it.
Oh, wow. Oh, that like that?
Could possibly be the 720 controller.
Oh, wow. So they're already planning. They have their answer, like, cooking to the Wii U?
Quite possibly. That obviously could have just been a total joke, too.
Curious. That's interesting. You know, I'll say this. Come what may, I slavishly buy, like, every system, every generation. I mean, I think the only system I ever skipped was the N64. Because it was worth skipping in many ways. And, so, you know, worst comes to worst, the way I'm looking at it, if this Wii U thing turns out to be only a marginal improvement over what I currently have, I've only got to wait, like, a year, and then, like, real next-gen systems are going to come out, and, you know, this thing can sit on my shelf idle, like its predecessor for most of its life. I'm getting more play out of my Wii. It's coming out of the wire, so I'm, like, blowing through a few cool games before the Wii U comes out, so I won't have to have the Wii on my shelf anymore. Like when the Wii U takes its spot.
So you can pack it up guilt free. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like what memories? I've completed like two games for you in the 5 years I've owned you. You've been a great pal. And just pack them away.
And one of those two games will never be Metroid Other M.
Oh no, we're gonna finish Metroid Other M.
Not with those motion controls.
Oh God. Look forward to our upcoming special feature detailing our experience with Metroid Other M for Nintendo Wii. Brian and I, the game's been out for a while, but we wanted to explore Brian being, among other things, a writer and a study of writing, wanted to explore the sexist narrative in Metroid Other M.
Nice.
And with his keen writer's grasp of narrative and symbolism, he's come up already in our limited play of that game. He has come up with some interesting perspective.
That's cool, man. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
I feel I'm being oversold, but I'll try.
I was just gonna say, if I oversold that, I'm sorry. But
no, even in your non-overselling description that you told me about, you mentioned it once in passing a couple weeks ago as a show idea. I was all over it. I'm not familiar with the game or anything, but you definitely piqued my interest.
Well, then we'll have to make it a point of finishing that up, suffering through the bad, like shoehorned in motion controls, and getting back to you on that. But yeah, that's it. I basically reported my little bit of Wii U news, and that's coming out on November, I think, 18th of this year. This is the year 2012. So by the time this episode gets up, I'll probably have had my Wii U for like 6 months. And
this would be an easy to edit show, so I'll probably put it up by the weekend. So
by the fourth weekend in 2014. All right, so that brings us to housekeeping. And since we are down a man, two men, one of whom is Grant, who normally handles half the housekeeping, I'll handle his half pertaining to the iTunes-verse. If you like our what you've heard here, swing on over to the iTunes, subscribe to our podcast there, give us a high rating. We like 10 out of 5 stars, ideally. So if you could figure out a way to make that happen, please do that.
Yeah, if you get frustrated with trying to figure out how to add 10 stars to a 5-star rating, you can head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can rate the show, you can download the show, you can stream the show, you can check out old episodes, you can check out new episodes. Yeah, you can talk about how awesome the new guy is, you can check out the show links, or you can just send us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
He's getting it. He's getting it. No, that's no www prefix, people. Don't throw that on front of it. All right, folks, that's a wrap. Brian, welcome aboard. Any final words?
No.
And we're
done. Peace!